Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On our way to our conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's national foreclosure settlement. So don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org. Or at 877-462-7555. We are visited once again in our studios here by Woody Curry. Woody Curry has been on the show many, many times, was a part of the feature of our Vietnam series years back when he went to Vietnam with us, a preset series, a Vietnam vet who came back, went through his own struggles with alcohol, alleged mental illness.
What do you mean by alleged? The experts said I was crazy. And me being dependent bought into it.
Then fought that addiction, found himself, and has been clinical director of the Baltimore Station for how many years?
Ever since, I don't know, 1994 or 5.
Long time.
Yeah.
And has developed his own style of way of dealing. The Baltimore Station is a place where, for men, it is a residential facility. They stay there for at least 18 months, right?
However long it takes to rewire their inner circuitry.
And has, here we go, and has his own theories, often controversial but effective, on how to address and deal with addiction. Join us here, 410-319-8888. So, welcome, Woody. Good to have you back.
Nice being here, Mark. I'm glad you put a humorous side to this because I told somebody before I came over here, my executive assistant, Kelly, I said, Kelly, listen to me and Mark. I say, because the more esoteric I get, the more precise he's going to get. I say, I'm going to stretch it out, and he's going to bring it right back home, and we're going to go back and forth all day. She said, that ought to be interesting. I said, that's what we do. That's what we do. We like, you know, we see the same thing, but we process it.
We do process it differently.
Different.
There's no question.
Everybody does.
Uh-oh, we got an email already.
Who's that?
Somebody named Valerie wrote in.
It might be.
She said, give my big brother my love.
That's your wife. Hey, hey, Valerie, how you doing? So, how you doing, Valerie? I'm glad you're not here, but I'm glad to speak to you because Mark told me what would happen to me if you saw me with my raccoon coat on. So I said, just tell her I said hi, but don't mention it.
Well, you just mentioned it.
Yeah, well, me and my sister straight up. She know how I get down.
So, we were talking earlier, 2 days ago, I guess, was when I first talked about this idea. We actually talked about it a couple of weeks back. That you've been, not just dealing with addiction as an addiction counselor and working with people for a long time, a lot of vets and more, but you've been developing over the years your own kind of thoughts on what addiction really is and how to address it. It's been changed. I mean, you've been developing it. It never stops developing.
Doing research.
Right.
Yeah. I'm always doing it. And you know, the brain is, I can't even begin to describe. I got a very limited, well, I see enough and know enough See, I'm surrounded by people, psychiatrists, PhD educators, social workers, neurologists, psychologists, everything. And all of this interchange is going on, you know. And then I did this thing with the state of Maryland for a year out at Spring Grove about behavioral health. And then, so I'm starting to look at stuff. And I've been, for the past year, studying, like, online lectures back and forth about the brain and the biological, neurological basis for human behavior. And so, to put it simply, the brain creates a reality to fit whoever the individual is. And so it's like a big multiprocessor. It's and it takes data in asymmetrically through different functions and things like that. Let me cut to the chase and give you an example of how old this. we have the neural circuitry now to validate a lot of things. It sounds almost mystical. But back when they found the Rosetta Stone, Napoleon, they saw in the Egyptian temples that a picture of a man with eyes all over his body. And what they were trying to say is that the whole body sees. And what they meant by seeing is that the brain sees the whole body. When the brain speaks, every cell in the body listens and lines up behind the message throughout, right? If the message is incomplete, it shows up as some kind of short wiring or the whole process hasn't been completed. And a lot of people approach life simply through ideas. And ideas, the brain can't really tell the difference between an idea and a reality. So their ideas set off certain types of biochemical responses to correspond with whatever state the brain is suggesting that the body has to respond to. Am I making sense? Man, and all of that shows that when you look at somebody and listen and see them and even pick up certain vibrations like compassion and things like that, when I do that, that's my brain doing this thing. And because I'm experiencing all of these processes simultaneously in multidimensional, asymmetric processes, the central point of it is me, and that makes me think that I'm doing it. But me thinking I'm doing it is the brain doing this thing. Am I making sense?
Yeah. Look,
I know where you want to go. I know where you want to go. Okay. So all of us are looking at the same stuff, but we're processing it differently. We're reading the cues from the environment at different levels all of the time. But we're only conscious mostly of what we see and what we're thinking. Now, thinking is really remembering, all right? That's what thinking is. It's really remembering. Seeing is when you stop thinking.
So how does this all tie to addiction?
Okay.
What you're saying.
Addiction is in the mesolimbic system of the brain, mainly. That's where the action is, the memory, reward, and learning process. And so it's a simple matter of certain behaviors are going to get a reward and certain others aren't, right? All right, so then if there's a constant balance going on within the human organism, homeostasis, and the brain directs all of that balance. And as the environment changes, the brain reorients itself almost quickly. But it's clumsy at first because it's feeling all of the different levels of data that's coming into it until it balances, right? So all of that movement and stuff and everything that we feel, that's just life doing its thing. Right. But what we do is we tell ourselves stories about the feelings. Now, feelings aren't facts. It's a fact that you're feeling it, but you're feeling it because you're alive and you're remembering and the brain is steadily doing this stuff. It's remembering and accumulating. It's processing all the time, even when we're not aware of it. And all we focus our attention on certain things, like you and I sitting here talking. Right. But there's a whole lot of other stuff going on at the same time that's even influencing what I'm saying to you and the way you're responding to me. And it's all from memory. And we're constantly synthesizing through words. Words are the conventions and we synthesize what they mean. But you and I usually are on the same page. So we have this straight line of communication. Right. We understand each other. But that happens on all levels with everybody all the time. Right. So that's the brain doing this thing, this interdependency, you know, that's constant dialogue between the organism and its environment, right? Now, if something in that organism isn't learned, all right, let's say you don't, and I mean learn by doing, because motor cells learn by doing. They don't learn because it's like you read a book on golf. You can understand every word in it intellectually. You wouldn't be able to go out there and hit that ball any distance because you haven't practiced the coordination and the brain hasn't calibrated itself with the entire process. So it's strictly an intellectual event. See, it never was going to happen. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, but break it down so I understand how this fits into addiction.
the whole person is addicted. All right, I'm getting to that part. Sensation. That's in the amygdala and the thalamus, hypothalamus, all of these little different functions, different shapes and things that make one thing. The amygdala acts on the fight, flight, instinctive response. There's no logic behind instinct. There's no survival. I mean, there's no logic behind survival. It's just done. That's the will to live, fight or flight. Now, those sensations usually send a message through the rest of the part of the brain until it reaches up front the cerebral cortex that can make a distinction as to whether the danger is real or imaginary, right? But if you just take some type of sedative drug so that that feeling is satiated right there, then you never really learn what's real and what's not, you see? And so you're really acting on animal instinct most of the time rather than a controlled, learned, progressive, evolutionary process of learning how to live. You learn how to survive. So, and every decision a person makes, even now, is based, there's some emotional state present when a person says anything. That's part of that person's homeostasis process, all right? Now, if your emotional state is constantly a state of euphoria, the need to learn to do anything doesn't even come up. You know, those insecurities because you're in a dangerous area or because you lack food or shelter or anything like that, when you take that away, when you take the effect of those impulses away by using drugs, then what you do, you really have a very limited capability to interact and learn with the larger community because you have taken yourself out of the everyday struggles. And other people that aren't using drugs, they those little fears, doubts, and uncertainties that we face every doggone day and are acclimated to do it because our brains adjusted to that stuff over the years, when a you take the drugs away, the addict is faced with a base that's entirely vulnerable to everything, which runs back to the need for the drug, you see? So it's like what you're looking at is a feedback loop in technological terms.
So let me, oh, we just lost our callers. Gary?
I know you're going to lose everybody. See, I knew I shouldn't have got off into that.
410-319-8888. Gary and others, call back. I'm going to get your call as soon as you pop in. 410-319-8888. As we wrestle with addiction, issues in addiction, and how we relate to those issues and what we do about them. 410-319-8888. If this is Gary, well, no one, he says. 410-319-8888. So join us here. We will get you on the air. And you can get there because one line that doesn't always work is now busy, so you can get on the phone and get in. 410-319-8888. So all that, so what does any of that have to do with how you approach addressing a person's addiction?
Okay. I'm not addressing addiction. That's a process of plasticity. That was established by using the drugs and engaging in the behavior that they engage in. You become what you do, all right? And people don't do what they think. They think based on what they were taught to believe. They were conditioned to believe that, okay? They do what was done to them, and that's the way people are. You know, the brain's not processing as an adult. It's a kid that's processing things in terms of external boundaries and things like that. As an adult, when you become self-sustaining, you can sort of negotiate your way through life. If you never learn how to do that, you spent most of the formative years, the turbulent years of adolescence and early adulthood, when most people establish an identity and things in a normal society or living situation, right? You spend most of that time above every normal challenge that anybody else faces. You don't face the challenge because you don't feel it. The drugs tell you, the brain, that you're okay. And every cell in the body is reading the brain's messages that everything is okay, you see? So you never really learn. Now, what you're looking at then is a dysfunctional lifestyle based on the fact that the person never learned how to negotiate all of those fears and things. I call it the cat on a hot stove syndrome.
Let me open the phones here. I have a question about that. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Woody Curry is with us, clinical director of the Baltimore Station, as we talk about new things we learn about addiction and the human soul and mind and body all connected into one.
All that, all that's
it
fantasy.
Is all connected.
It's fantasy.
It's not fantasy.
Where is it?
Well, we'll get back to that. Let's go to the phone first.
Yeah, okay.
We'll come back.
It's a mental construct.
I knew we were going to disagree at some point tonight.
Yeah, you took it into where most addicts take it.
All right.
Into abstract concepts that suggest something but can't prove nothing.
Oh, I know what you're saying, but let me come back to that. Let's go to the phones first. 410-319-8888. Lawrence, you're on the air. Hi, Lawrence, you're on the air. We don't have the phones?
Oh, hi.
Hey,
okay.
Lawrence, on the air. Welcome.
Okay, hello?
Hi, you're on the air, Lawrence. Go ahead. Lawrence, you're on the air. Okay, hold on, Lawrence. We'll try to get and see what's going on with the phones here and get you there. 410-319-8888 is number here. So where were we?
You were talking about the soul and all of that. Okay.
I don't mean soul in a literal sense.
How can you be literal?
You can't be.
I know. That's why I said it's an abstraction. And everybody will project any kind of encoding that they have in them into that abstraction and come up with something that they're going to tell you about. And when I say, how big is it? And then we get into, see, people, life is a given. Living is learned behavior. Are we agreed on that?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
So far, so good.
Yeah, so far, so good. The brain wires itself. Neural pathways are established by repetitive behaviors. Neural pathways.
Yeah.
You know.
And they can be altered by the environment you're in depending on what happens surrounding you.
That's my point.
Right.
Okay. Now trauma will cause more of an instinctive response than a natural, educated. You see, because the brain's in panic mode then.
So trauma can be, which we can define trauma in many ways.
Yeah, I'm defining the central nervous system.
Right.
Now, you're going to talk about what happened. I'm talking about how it's processed.
But what I'm saying...
you see what I'm talking... You see the difference? We're on the same page, but I'm talking about the actual processing in the CNS as a result of that trauma.
So let's go to the phone. I'm going to come back. Forget this. 410-319-8888. Folks want to jump into this conversation. Alex, you're on the air.
Thank you for letting me on the air.
Welcome.
my question is, why are we making it so complicated so only a clinician can understand it? When most of us who suffer from the disease of addiction need to keep it real simple.
All right. Don't go away, Alex. Let's have a little interaction here.
Hey, Alex, I understand what you're saying, but the position that I'm in, I can relate it simply because that's what I had to learn how to do, but it's still clinical findings that I'm talking about, and there's a limit to how much a layperson, I can use it enough to communicate it, you know, when I say things like when you look at a person and you see what they're doing and thinking and maybe feeling, you know, that's the brain doing what it's doing, you see. Now, okay, if I want to deal with what I'm seeing, looking, and doing, that's an intervention, okay? And that's simply put. But what I'm looking at, when I look at it, I'm looking at the source of what I'm seeing, not just what I'm seeing, you see. I have to see the whole thing. Otherwise, it's just a partial conclusion that I'm coming to that can easily be mistaken by social referencing or any other kind of process.
Does that make any sense? You want to get another thought?
Yeah, I mean, but for the everyday Joe, how can you help me with that approach?
Well, the help that a person needs is to be in a healthy environment. In a healthy environment where those types of dysfunctional expressions of behavior, attitude, or whatever, okay, are looked at as part of a rewiring process rather than something being wrong with the individual, then people are more likely to participate in a process of self-improvement than a process of labeling it as dysfunctional or things like that. So we try to provide it on that positive side of the area, like everything in the universe is a work in progress. So you look at it at one stage of development and take a snapshot and label somebody. That's not That's not the way I see it. It's a process that every individual is going to. Life is a self-defining process. In other words, the choices that the individual makes is going to be the determining factor.
What you were saying, Alex, I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think what Alex is saying, and you can jump in here because we're going to go to other callers, Edward and Yale, we're going to come to your calls, so hang up, we're going to get to everybody's call here, is that the way you're describing how the brain affects who we are, what we do.
The brain is who you do. It's okay. Your brain.
Yeah, but so
you're just like
wait. So you're describing the complexity of it. And what Alex is saying, okay, so that may be the complexity of how my brain works.
Okay, let me give you the simple way of
Let me finish. So Alex is asking you, you're giving us the complexity here, but how does that help everyday people deal with their addiction?
Correct.
Okay, right? The bottom line, a simple process. You can't think or analyze or talk your way into right living, but you can live your way into right talking, thinking, and being. And that's on you.
I heard that.
That's it.
That I heard.
That's simple. And so you set up an environment where all of these dysfunctional behaviors aren't allowed to grow and be reinforced or co-signed, and the brain will organize itself on a normal pattern of interdependence on that person's own efforts rather than being dependent on everything and everybody else. But that's a living process. That has to be learned. The drug use prevents that learning from occurring, so the individual is starting where he became emotionally and psychologically and spiritually dependent on drugs is where all of the maturation and growth stopped. So the brain has to do that itself, and you provide the environment for it.
Go ahead, Alex.
Now I'm hearing you.
Good. But I have to go because I am a clinician. I have to make the connections. I have to make the connections. And the criteria, the evidence, is the human brain. So once I get outside of there, then I'm fantasizing.
But look, I'm new with this, man. I got 7 years clean. 7 years clean. I want to stay clean.
Right.
Well, just keep doing what you've been doing for the past 7 years, and you done got that pathway firmly established, and just stay on it, and you'll be okay.
All right.
Trust the process.
Thank you.
Thank you. And interesting, and you still do your Monday night relapse prevention, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I do this down here. I got guys in residence who know more about the brain than a whole lot of dogs. You'd be surprised how people will take to information that they can use and see some possibilities, proven evidence-based possibilities.
Somebody in Yale just hung up, but I saw that he wants to say something about this feeling like you were trying to make this is getting too complex.
It is a complex process. I'm simplifying it, really. Ask any neurologist or neurosurgeon, and they will say I'm doing an oversimplification, but I can't go as far into it as I had to go in research. Who understands it?
But what I guess
I understand what people are saying, but there's not a lot of simple ways to put it.
But after we go to our next caller, Edward, so hold on, Edward. We're going to take a break and then come back to Edward. So take Edward now. My poor producer's there all by himself. It just has one hand up, other hand on the phone, trying to make it all work at the same time. So we should take a brief break. We'll come right back, and Edward, we're going to pick up. But then I want to really kind of push on. So if you understand how our neurological, our brain system works.
Understand how you work.
How does that affect how an addict can wrestle with his or her addiction?
Okay.
And how you can help them wrestle with that addiction? We'll take a break. We'll come back to do that. All right?
All right.
Don't go away. Edward, we're going to come right to your call. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I'm here with Woody Curry, who joins us every month and a half or so to talk about issues around addiction, the stuff he's been working on lately around the human brain and how it functions and how that affects our lives and who we are and our addictions. He is clinical director of the Baltimore Station. 410-319-8888 is the number here. I promise to go right to the phones. 410-319-8888. Edward, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I'd like to say good evening to you and your guest.
Good evening.
Yes, I believe my question has been answered from the previous caller about then if it's coming from the brain, it has a lot to do with the brain, then do I, as an addict, an active addict, do I learn to practice, the getting clean, practice staying clean? I mean, all the programs, I've been in two treatment centers, and I didn't trust the process, as your guests say. of doing the 12-step program, and I just kind of defeated myself. My question, you know, was do I have to, you know, practice? Is it a practice? That's what I'm asking.
That's a good question, Edward.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Every day you stay clean is another.
But he's still resting with being clean, is what he's saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, see, let me explain me what I'm saying. When I say brain, people think that I'm just talking about that 3.5 pound or 4 pound stuff in the top of our head. But when I say brain, I'm talking about the whole individual, because the mesolimbic system covers the whole body. And so when I say brain, I'm talking about everything. And I think that's where the dichotomy or thing exists in the way people describe things and the way I look at it as a clinician and the way people look at it in labels. So when I say brain, I'm talking about the entire expression that I'm seeing sitting in front of me. Okay, and that's what I'm looking at. And if I listen carefully enough, I can see what's going on through the expression that an individual's doing. But I also know what the brain has the power to do. It's called plasticity. It will wire in behaviors that are rewarding, or it will wire in behaviors that are dysfunctional. It makes no distinction. That process will work either way, and it's based on the choices that the individual made. So that process of plasticity is really establishing a different set of an extension of the neural network already. In other words, like you override an established wiring system. It wires from the original one, but it's more elaborate and functioning better. And that's a constant process as you go throughout life. You always fine-tuning. The body's always fine-tuning everything. But it has to be the complete process. It can't just be an idea or a belief and a feeling. See, it has to be something to do. You have to do something. You have to practice it so the whole body will be involved, not just your intellect or not just your emotions. When you're running off of that, you can indulge your fantasies, but you definitely have to obey your realities, and the realities are the basic things that you have to do.
Aha! I thank you so much, sir, and it's something that I'm feeling very encouraged about. And I would like to actually, I believe I have your information about the program that exists, and you may just be saving a life today, and I appreciate that. And that life is mine. And I don't know if I can get your number or I have it, but I would like to give it a call. If that's all I need to do is call.
Yep, call it. I got somebody there that will hear you.
At the Baltimore station.
Yep. If I can't do it, we are not the only place in town, but we are part of a network. So if it's that kind of thing, we'll see that you get, you know, wherever you need to go. Okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank
all right.
you both.
All right. Take care. So tell me how this is, before we go to the next caller, Clarence, you're next up, how this is, this kind of work you're doing in the last year or so, really, we've done more than that, but you know what I'm saying, kind of really functioning on the neurological system, how that's affected your work in terms of approach?
The Baltimore station is kind of unique, not kind of, it is, in terms of what you call a treatment thing. Because you've been there, you'd be hard-pressed to find out what kind of treatment was actually going on if you're looking for classical kind of treatment, right?
Right.
Right? The station is set up in an asymmetric process. We have people there all day who never used any drugs at all, right? But the people who do use drugs have to find a way to communicate and interact and live amongst them on a daily basis. We got kids and school kids that come in for teaching and learning and different stuff like that, right? So the guys have to learn how to address that part of society. We have people, you've been in there, you know, we have artists.
No, our listeners haven't.
Yeah, well, we have the whole Baltimore community involved that wants to in one way or the other. And that's like learning to live amongst different kinds of people with different ideas and different beliefs and not be afraid of them because they're different. You see, you're in an environment where it's so diverse that anybody can just about come in and, you know, just converse with people. So it changes the whole face of the people mostly that we have in the program who felt like outcasts and disconnected and everything else. And then the stuff that I'm doing as far as telling them that their brain's designed to change their reality if they choose to do it, and showing them the way that it's done and seeing things like that, everybody gets on board. So it's like that whole organizational thing has a lot of different components and it's a lot of different functions, but they're all organized around the same goal, which creates a healthy living situation. Sure, there's going to be, in any situation, there's going to be problems and dysfunctions and lessons to be learned. People call them failures. I call them lessons to be learned. That stuff's going to happen. But what do you do with it when it does happen? Do you learn from that? Everybody learns from everybody else, and that's what makes a community, and that's where the healing takes place, just in the day-to-day interaction. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not what I'm saying, that it's not orchestrated. It's orchestrated by life itself. Life tends to come together when there's need, a common need, right? You see what I'm saying? It's just the way we wired. You know, we got what they call mirror neurons. You ever heard of them?
Yep.
You know what they do, right?
Well, talk about it.
Yeah, compassion, empathy, all of those things that we don't see the connection, but we're wired for that kind of stuff. See, we only use, man, what do they say? And I guess that's just a random. Well, let's just say when you look at the brain, you're looking at a quantum event, not a physical linear cause and effect thing. You're looking at a quantum process where everything's rolling around together, and out of all of that chaos, it will organize itself into a higher functioning.
And we're only using maybe 10% of our brain.
Yeah, but the reason why we only use it because we think too much. We think, but we don't see.
Which is why part of what people do is meditate.
Right. You think, but you don't see. What meditation taught me, like I told you, going to the beach and looking out into infinity. And guess what the ocean told me?
What did it tell you?
That's how life is. It was nice and calm because it wasn't nothing happening in the sky. But when the clouds come over, something happens with the ocean. Little teeny things start to ripples, and then the earth is moving and it shifts and all that. And that's what nature does. And so that's what we do, right? But when I look at nature and see that it always comes back to a state of equilibrium, that's what the brain does too, because it's a natural process. Am I making sense, or am I sounding too mystical?
It's a little mystical, but I understand what you're saying.
You understand
what
I'm saying?
But it takes, when you live in a society like ours, right?
Okay, that's why we have a therapeutic community.
Right.
See, the society we live in, the big thing, is the law of the jungle. It is. Survival of the fittest. Okay? Literally.
Yeah, and some...
It's very ruthless and...
And some societies exacerbate that more than others.
Well, see, what happens is until it becomes a collective problem, the best you're going to get is little, small, functioning proportions and hope it spread. I mean, look how I spread it out from a homeless shelter to having almost every part of the society in Baltimore involved in the process in one way or the other. Now, I do all that. Ain't no way. You know,
no, it was a collective thing that did it.
That's how things go. If an idea has some merit, it will take hold and it will expand on its own. That's what the brain does.
So let me open the phones again. 410-319-8888 here with Woody Curry for his visit to our studios talking about addiction, his latest work with addiction as clinical director of the Baltimore Station. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I'll check the emails in a minute. And Clarence, you're on the air.
All right, thank you, Mr. Steiner, for taking the call.
Welcome.
You guys kind of elaborated on what I wanted to say, but I, being a computer specialist in electronics, I always looked at it as like loading the wrong operating system. You know, if you've got a kid that's mm-hmm. growing up in a household with drugs and crazy behaviors going on, that operating system is getting loaded in his head, either at that point or somewhere down the line.
All the way down the line.
Yeah. The same way I view, look at some of the problems, you look at some of the recent headlines, you know, and when a kid is coming up in a household where hunting, as if we're still hunting gatherers, and that operating system. Oh, I need a rifle to hunt with or an assault weapon. All of those things can be loaded into an individual's head and become part of his behavior or his thought process at any given point in time. You know, so I always look at it as loading the wrong operating system and not having somebody to, you know, wipe it out and reload something, you know, more social and more conducive to a better society and behavior pattern. But the therapeutic community, to me, is up against something that's bigger than us as a species. I mean, this is way beyond us because of the construct of the society we live in, just as you elaborated on. That's what I had in mind. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, in concept, that's what I was saying about a living is like a feedback loop. We see what we did. We see what we thought, you see. We do what was done to us. It's like a feedback loop. The body is resounding, like, and that's what it is. It's creating this reality based on what was said and felt and done to us. It creates a reality about that, and that becomes a normal reality for that organism, even with the pain and stuff.
It's one of the reasons why, and it's in the societies as this one is organized, I think, why you have the amount and intensity of addiction, because we have, you know, you deal with addiction. Most programs deal with addiction for illegal, quote unquote, illegal substances. But addiction goes way beyond that.
I'm a clinician. I understand all of that, but you know, it's still my focus is on people. And these identifying things, we're talking about a process, not an event. It's a process. Okay, the body is chemically dependent. Every cell in the body has went through what you call neuroadaptation to the cellular change, the chemical messages being sent by the drug. So that is the dependent state that the body is in. So they're not reading cues correctly. So if they're not reading the environment correctly, how can they interact with it correctly? That's right. Where the dysfunction goes. Okay, now a total body that's dependent. The idea of not having what I'm dependent on. Again, I'm back at the ocean. You ever see a fish don't know he's in water till you take him out of it? And that's what you see going on with an addict internally. When the loss of the drug or the idea of not being able to get it or to secure a supply. So that's a 24/7 thing. A fish can't stay out of water, but so doggone long. And that's a tolerance thing. And so that's what you're looking at when you're looking at an addict. He doesn't know he's in water. Fish don't know they're in water.
Right. All I'm saying is that we always look at addiction. We think of addiction.
You're social referencing. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
I know, and I don't pay that. That's social referencing, and that's not what's happening. That's my point. I don't get caught up in social referencing because the people that's doing the social referencing don't even know that that's what they're doing. They're doing it unconsciously.
Well, exactly. I'm not disagreeing with that, but I'm saying as a part of the problem is that I think but what you're saying is that you don't deal with that. It's fine because that's not what you're not supposed to. You're not supposed to, maybe on some levels. But I think as the larger discussion in the society, you have to deal with it because people don't, because we're not aware of it.
Well, they will when they get around to it. But my focus is not on the whole bit. It's too big. You know, I got to, you know, you start with something that works on a small scale and you hope it catches on. Right. And if it's right, it usually does catch on. So what the track we started on at the station way back when is expanding and keeps on getting bigger and bigger. Right. And so I got to keep doing research. I got to keep seeing what's happening and isolating these different processes, these behavioral processes, these psychological interventions, different techniques, all of that's part of the whole process that you see at the station. Even the therapists that we have walking around in there aren't dressed like experts because that fosters dependency. Then everybody starts looking right. But they know that we are somewhere in a mix.
Right. You and the other guys down there definitely do not dress like clinicians.
Why should we? I learned that in the war.
410-319-8888. Joe, you're on the air.
I'd just like to comment on what they were saying about you're going into too much of a expanded explanation. I'm glad that you're going into an expanded explanation because what I found out is that even with the people I grew up with or the people I run across who go to jail, in and out of jail, or people that have sort of problems, you can't solve their problem, but it sort of gives you an understanding of why they have their problem. And I also agree with your definition of decisions. Sometimes you make decisions based on sort of a chaos, but to me, I just sort of found that I like the fact that you do go into a little bit more of a detailed explanation, because it just gives me a better understanding of when I come across people. Not that you can solve people's problems, but you can stand back and look and sort of understand sometimes why people have problems. And I'll just hang up on that comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
That's good. You know, that's basically what I do. Like I was saying, Mark and I were talking about, I learn more by looking and seeing than I do by thinking. Because thinking is just one process of remembering, and we're too cerebral in this society. We take everything up in our head and put it in some abstract concept and throw it away. I had that experience during the war of killing people, and they would say, "Nah, we inflicted casualties."
Right.
You see, our language can just take the scene right off and go into a state of denial. And then when you get out of the military speak and come back to the real world and you look at what went down, oh, my God, yep, that's what happened.
Well, that's why people go through what they go through when they come back.
I know.
Part of the reason.
Some of the reason.
Some of the reason. Somebody just wrote in on Facebook, Jameson wants to know, is your guest tonight an atheist? He sounds like it.
A what?
Atheist.
What? How did that get in the conversation?
I'm just telling you what somebody just wrote in.
Well, I don't know what the person's hearing, so I can't respond to that. I know I didn't get into any kind of particular beliefs. You know, what I'm saying is that, you know, people are entitled to believe whatever they want, you know. I don't even get into that, man.
410-319-8888. Lawrence, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I agree with Dr. Curry wholeheartedly. I stumbled across a book. I know at least over 10 years ago that enlightened me on what you are saying, Mr. Curry, in that, and what I learned was that a lot of our reactions are directed by the brain itself. Once you become addicted, the brain has, like you said, has changed molecularly. And so when we make decisions, we're not really making those decisions based on what society says is a moral decision. We learned that as addicts, you are a morally deficient person. Well, what's basically going on is that you are responding to what you have trained your brain to think is it needs for survival. Mm-hmm. And so when you relapse, you didn't consciously decide to relapse based off a lack of morality. You relapsed because your brain said, "Hey, man, if you don't give me what I've become dependent on, you're going to die." And so until I learned that, I was going about recovering my person in the wrong direction. And so I agree with you wholeheartedly. I stumbled across the book. I think the name of it was The Addicted Brain. I think that was the title of it. But that changed my whole perspective on addiction. I don't even consider myself an addict unless I'm actively acting as an addict does. If I'm not getting high, if I'm not using, if I'm not moving about in an addictive state, then I'm not labeled an addict anymore. I've moved on. You know, I'm not subjected
right
to that title anymore. So I agree with you wholeheartedly, and thanks for sharing. I wish more treatment programs would jump on or would start to investigate that, because I think that that's the direction that addiction recovery needs to move towards.
And the book, I looked at the book, is called The Addicted Brain. That is a book that was put out. So
no kidding. What year was that?
I'll tell you in a minute, but you want to see something, Lawrence, before I look that up?
I'm sorry. Say again?
I'm just saying that there is a book called The Addicted Brain.
Right.
Yep.
Well, the thing about research is you got to keep going with it, because you don't run into anything until you run into evidence, you see. and I mean physical evidence, because if you are human, then whatever's going on with you is biological on some level. You can that's one thing that's undeniable, because you're a human organism. So, and we understand how we put together. I mean, well, see, they don't teach you who you are in school unless you go to medical school. So most people run around, have no idea what they're doing. I mean, physiologically.
Right.
You see? And so, therefore, if you don't know what you're doing, how can you know what you're talking about? You're going to label it from some reference point that's not really what it is. That's all I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So everybody's in the process somewhere. But it's according to where they are in the process. Everybody's not a researcher.
Right.
You see, so.
So let me say a favor. Lawrence, appreciate the call. I'm going to try to get one of the callers in before the end of the hour. Thank you so much for calling in. Alex, you're on the air. Alex, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. My question was, earlier you said one time that you were meditating and you go maybe to the beach or wherever you go, and you then get some, I'm going to say, distinctions and responses that you don't get because you're not really thinking, you're being somewhere.
Yeah.
And my question to you is, whenever there's something going on in the universe, let's say a storm or something, you always see the birds start to leave before anybody else. They start to move in a direction because they're centered in whatever that is telling them that they need to get from where they are to somewhere else. And I want you to maybe take a look at what is it that we are not able to see anymore that everything else on the planet that's alive can see, that doesn't have to go to a mosque, that doesn't have to go to church, that doesn't have to go anywhere, but they can find the distinctions necessary to live inside the universe, where the universe is constantly committed to stand in the same circle, where human beings are always in.
Okay, but let me just only interrupting Alex, because we only have about 3 minutes left. I'll let Woody have a chance to respond to you, because you're saying some really important things, I think. Woody, is that too similar to what we talk about all the time?
When you talk about the universe, we made up of the same stuff. Okay?
Yes.
We made up of the same stuff. We're no different than anything else in the universe, just an intelligent life form.
Original pieces of the Big Bang are inside of all of us.
They're all, yeah, you experience the Big Bang every morning when you open your eyes and light comes on, then the show starts.
Yes.
That's it.
Well, what's the distinction?
There is none.
Well, why then are you always in survival?
Because that's what life is. Life is living.
They don't have to live in survival. You understand what I'm saying? Like, you are in survival. I'm in survival. You're always looking to either get something, to do something. You're never really being that much.
Well, we only have like 2 minutes left, but it's not. I mean, you did talk about survival early in the program.
Yeah. Well, one thing I do when I'm sitting down at the beach and looking at the ocean, I'm not doing anything, and nothing's happening. Okay. Now, survival is what is evolution. That's what you label survival. It's evolving, growing, changing, learning, evolving. That's what. But when you talk about survival, that is the basic life, the will to live in every living thing. I mean, you've been in the jungle and everything is trying to get to the sun, and you see all kinds of different shape forms. It's an asymmetric process. It's not a straight line explanation thing.
Woody Curry, I just want to say thank you once again. It's always good to have you on the show. Never know where we're going to go, but we get there somehow.
I'm glad I got off before I got to the limit. Woody. I ain't limited. I'm still fooling with it. I'm just joking. I did it the best I could.
Woody Curry, clinical director of Baltimore Station, joins us for his visit here to our program to address issues of our life and addiction. Always good to have you here, brother. Thanks so much for coming. On my way out, I'll remind you, a news piece just came over and tell you about that Dallas Evans, who is the head of the Board of Regents at Morgan State University, is no longer the head of the Board of Regents. That the board voted him out. He was the one who was moving to push the ouster of the president, David Wilson, and the board has decided he's no longer chairman of the board. That just came over the wire here in the Baltimore Sun. Thought I'd share that with you all in the Morgan State University. So I thank all of our guests for being here tonight, reminding you the Mark Satterthwaite Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. And our producers are Bobby Marvin Jones, Mark Gunnery, Cynthia Mavrones. Our engineer tonight is Andrew Holt. Our intern is Lila Warshaw. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Reminding you on the way out of here that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. For the fifth year in a row, Maryland public schools have been named number one in the country by Education Week magazine. Visit MarylandEducators.org to explore what it means to invest in our students, school construction, safety, and educators programs and services that make our schools a national leader. And for public radio, there'll be EAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.